Welcome to episode 185 of Red Board Rewind. My name is Spencer Lugenbeel, and today my special guest is Gulfstream Park's very own Brian Natto. Me and Brian go over three races from this past Saturday at Gulfstream Park, those being races 1, 7, and 12. And some angles that we talk about are why horses like Sir Samuel are bad bets and races that you really want to try to beat those type of favorites, and also how important first off the claim stats are when looking at short priced horses. This is Red Board Rewind. It's the same old story in this cycle. We go back and forth. We go back and forth. It ain't good for me. Why we do this for? We go back and forth. Won't do this no more. Always have it sell it. 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 And now I'd like to welcome in my special guest for this week's edition of Red Board Rewind, someone I've had on the show plenty, someone who I love to always talk horse racing with. It's Brian Natto of Gulfstream Park. Brian, how are you?
Hey, Spencer, I'm doing good, man. Doing really good. And we're right in between our two big days. The Fountain of Youth was a couple weeks ago, and the Florida Derby is on the horizon. So a lot to look forward to. And, you know, another start from Forte, the heavy Kentucky Derby favorite. So, yeah, it's exciting down here.
I always noticed with these big prep weekends, then there's always like that lull in between for the week or two afterward. Do you ever notice, A, maybe a dip in the pools, or I know Gulfstream's such a strong parimutuel pool anyway. I always feel like the next few weeks after the big Derby preps, it kind of feel like, you know, not that you're just tired, but just like, you know, it doesn't bring the same importance, which is, as a horse player, kind of ridiculous because you want to try to make money every day.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting down here. The day after the Fountain Youth, we paid off the Rainbow Six. So that was a huge day handle-wise as well. And, of course, we're not going to get the $40 million, $45 million we got on Pegasus or Fountain Youth Day. But things have been very, very strong down here. The weather has been you can't even make up how good the weather has been. We've lost basically no races on turf at all. So the handle and the pools have been really, really good. And, you know, I do agree with you that, you know, normally you're going to just have a natural hangover off those days. But no, we've been chugging along quite positively down here. And, you know, Florida Derby, the culmination of the championship meet, should just be a monster day.
You talk about not losing any race days. I mean, look at this. You guys put in a synthetic track, and now you guys are going to have perfect weather, it seems, every single day. I feel like with Saratoga as well, like, there's just some meets where I think it was a couple of years ago where we lost, like, 86 races due to rain. And you just realize when you look back at the meet as a whole, it's like, man, my handle is way down. You're trying to figure out why. You're like, oh, makes sense that, you know, three-quarters of the turf races are off the turf. And now, like, with you guys having the synthetic track, I mean, we've talked about this plenty of times, just how much of a key it is. And I remember, I think it was the second or third week, way back when you guys first brought in the synthetic, where I think you had, like, a 10-horse turf race, and it scratched down, but there was still enough AEs that made it, like, 12. It was, like, the winners. Yeah.
No, exactly. It's been, you know, a very, it's been a positive addition. I don't think there's any doubt about that. We really, it just hasn't, it's so bizarre. It hasn't come into play. I mean, don't quote me. I know we lost on opening day. Well, I shouldn't even say opening day. When we brought back turf racing, which I believe was December 1st, I think we had to take two of the three grass races off that day. I'm not positive on this, but I think since that weekend, we haven't really lost anything at all. The weather has been nothing short of beyond believable, really, because, you know, I've been down here now about 12, 13 years for the winter, at least, and full time about 4 or 5 years. And, you know, you just expect rain. And that's one of the reasons why the Tapita was put in. And it just has not come into play this year. We were also very, very fortunate. And knock on wood, for the next 2 weeks, we can kind of see it out, you know.
I feel as well. And for me, looking at Gulfstream Park as a whole, and we talk just turf racing has been such a key component of this meet. Now you bring in the Tapita. Now we have, you know, pretty much everything is wrapped in a bow. How good is it for the condition book and the guys who make the races when they just don't have to deal with all the rain? Because I feel like there's so many scratches, and then trainers and owners are trying to get other horses back into races as soon as possible. You've kind of had a clean condition book as well, to the point where it's like, hey, my horses now can get on a schedule. They're going to race once every 4 weeks, once every 5 weeks. And for grass horses especially, with no rain, it must do wonders for the just amount of racing they can do as well.
Yeah, it's been very, very clean down here. You know, everybody that wanted to get a race, they've had it. You know, obviously races don't fill, and that's each and every track, but that's kind of behind the scenes. But anything that's been in the book that they wanted to run, for the most part, has gone off without a hitch because of the weather down here. So we've been just, like I said, very, very fortunate. Field sizes are strong. The turf, again, has been very, very well received. You see it on each and every day. And we're going to talk about a few today where, you know, the field size is just very, very robust, and you've got also eligibles as well. So, man, it's just been really, really good. We always like to kick off with a turf race, and our early pick fives have consistently handled $750,000. So as a horse player, you know, what more can you ask for?
Not much at all. You brought up the question of, you know, races not filling, and I've learned about this as kind of being, you know, someone who likes to look at layoff trainers and stuff like that as an angle. And I have talked to people who either have been owners, trainers, a mix of both. And a lot of times you see horses on these 31, 60 day layoffs, and everyone's like, oh, they're just giving them some time off on the farm. And a lot of the people that I've talked to about this say, no, it's really the fact they just can't get a race to fill. And that's the reason for the layoff. Not so much that they thought the horse needed time off to begin with.
Yeah, I think it really just depends on the horse. I mean, if you've got a classy horse and you're trying to get him back to the races, or maybe you're trying to sneak him into a race, you know, classier horses don't have many conditions. And what happens is when, you know, you've got to write a race for a horse that, you know, is looking for a spot to start off his year. And, you know, you're not going to get a 3X to go. It doesn't happen anymore. So you have to be creative. And of course, trainers are smart too. You know, they see a horse, a good horse gearing up on the tab, and they know sooner or later he's coming back. So maybe they're not going to enter when that kind of race goes. So I think that's, to me at least, that's only really that's problems for the rich almost, yeah. You know, because for the most part, and when I mean rich, the person with that kind of horse, because for the most part, those are the type of races that might struggle to fill. Your cookie cutter, your workman-like races, that we've had no problem with that whatsoever, because we've been very fortunate, again, with the turf and things like that, to have races, you know, with full, robust fields. And it's more like the, you know, the expensive optional claimer that you might have a graded stakes horse and that might not go, that type of thing. And even for that, I stretch my memory to think if it's even happened.
I think I remember one year when Chrome came back, maybe it was like 5, I think, at the time, and they built that listed stake form. And I think he ran 4th in that race in a field of 4. Like, it was the most bizarre spot in the world for the horse. One other thing, too, now, obviously, when we're talking, you know, the turf racing and just stuff like that, is there anybody who you're really trying to aim towards, you know, whether that maybe under the radar for trainer wise or jockey wise, you think it's been, you know, maybe they're a 12% rider, but really if they had a couple more, you know, neck finishes go their way, they could be that, you know, other top rider that just people don't think to see or look at as the Irads or Joels are out there.
Well, I'll tell you what, the Hall of Famer, Javier Castellano, he just won the George Wolfe Award, too, at Santa Anita, which is a big, big, huge deal in amongst the jockeys. Javier has been in really good form. He's really done a good job to almost kickstart or revitalize, I don't know if those are the right words, his career. Sure. Not that it was, you know, off the rails by any stretch of the imagination. But Javier has consistently put horses in the right spots, basically from the day he got back down here in South Florida. And, you know, let's just be honest, he's not riding 2-to-1s every race either. So you have to give him a big shout out. The other guy that instantly comes to mind is Jimmy Toner. He's brought a relatively select group down here. And boy, Jimmy's horses, each and every one of them have all outrun their odds or have all been spot on, have been perfectly put in races. And even, you know, he had a stakes horse that I tried a few weeks back. Something Boogie, I think, in the Fountain of Youth Day marathon on the grass for the fillies and mares. And I think she was fourth, but she like made a winning move into the far turn, but she was fresh off a 1X and she was over her head. But, you know, stuff like that falls through the cracks. Even that horse ran huge. Backyard Boogie, maybe.
Jimmy's
been a guy that has just really been on point with everything he's run down here. And, you know, one of the good guys that we always root for, too. So those would be the kind of jockey trainer names that have come to mind to me.
We talk about Javier, and this is something that for me, when it came to Saratoga, even, you know, everyone talks IRAD and all these people. And there were only two based on stats that Javier and Jose Lascano were the only two jockeys to have positive ROIs on turf out of all the great, great riders there. And I was like, let's put it to the test. Cause I already knew that I was pretty much a Lascano homer when it comes to that. And I would bet him a lot on the grass. I think that first weekend, Javier got me three or four solid, like $10+ winners. And it was all on the turf and his dirt races were just not good. And I've now come to the, you know, idea, and I've heard stuff, and I'm sure you have too, that because Ramon got hurt, that he kind of got all the extra mounts and he just kind of, you know, won Eclipse Awards due to just kind of being in the right place at the right time. And then the Ortiz brothers coming, he goes back to being not mediocre, but just not the top of the cream of the crop. And I feel like Javier has kind of become like a specialty rider to me now. He can win a race on dirt, but I want him on these turf races, and I want him on turf routes specifically. I just feel like him and Junior and Jose Lascano are these guys that people just forget about, and then they hit two or three $15 winners, and then people will bet them, and then they'll forget about them, and then 2 weeks later they do the same thing. And you bring up Jimmy Toner too, and you bring up stuff with like a horse making a winning move, but being in over its head. Watch this horse now drop back down with a fourth into an N2X and not go off the favorite, maybe go off, you know, second, third choice at 7-2, 4-1. But when you can watch races like that and understand the condition book and just where these horses are going to move to, Jimmy took a shot. I know Jimmy's, I don't know him personally, but I've known him just through the racing and know he likes to spot his horses very well. This is going to be a horse that I need to now write a note and be like, if this one drops into an N2X or fits, and there's no monsters in that race, this one has a slight class edge because he ran a winning race in a graded stake race that people won't be able to see just from looking in the form.
Yeah, or you just, if the horse comes back in another stakes race, to me it would be even more ideal because that just shows the confidence for a patient trainer. And if it's not against as many strong horses, even though it is a stakes race, it could still be viewed as a pretty sizable drop in class. So she's definitely one on my watch list. And yeah, the turf is a niche kind of thing. You know, it's just so much different than dirt racing. And you're right. You know, IRAD is great. Don't get me wrong, but you know, when IRAD is on a 6-1, the 6-1 is 7-2. And that's the penalty you pay. And listen, IRAD is phenomenal, but he still loses 73-74% of the time. And I don't think people realize that as much. So, you know, I agree with you. You got to use those kind of guys, certainly. But, your Lascanos or your Juniors or your Javiers, they're out there and they're just as, you know, the difference when you're talking about Gulfstream Park, when you're talking about Saratoga, you're talking about whatever Keeneland, what have you, the difference between whoever you think is the best rider and whoever I think is the eighth rider, there's not that much of a
Correct.
difference. And I've never been a jockey's guy, and maybe that's in part because I've always been around or followed or handicapped or worked in the bigger circuits. I just don't pay a lot of attention to it because as great as IRAD is, he's not strong enough to lift 1300 pounds over his head and run with it. You know what I mean? So I have so much respect for all of them. It's not anywhere remotely close to the top of my handicapping list. And IRAD he had a ride the other day on the turf that was out of this world. I think he won by maybe a neck. Maybe it was a nose. I don't even remember. It was on Sunday. And I actually said it to the group, the office group. I said, I'm not a jockey's person. That was absolutely unbelievable because you just watch it and he just knew he was going to get there and he never really asked the horse. But again, the Javier's, the Junior Alvarado's, you know, whoever is in the, we'll call it the second level behind Irad and Luis Saez, you know, they're a fraction behind. They're just so damn good themselves, you know?
Absolutely. Let's talk some turf racing. Let's talk this first race from Gulfstream Park this past Saturday, this 20,000 non-winners of two life, 1 and 1/16 miles on the turf. It was an interesting race for me. I came up with a couple in this race. First of all, full field again, you know, 11 made the entries. And I feel like when I was looking over this race, I wanted to find a couple that fit. And I knew that one horse I definitely wanted to use was Sir Samuel, Jose Ortiz, Michael Morrison. Now listen, Michael's 1 for 30 so far in the year, but the race last time out, and listen, he's pretty much become somewhat of a proven loser at this level, but I want to try and use these types that aren't good enough to win in my idea, but can possibly at least hit the board. And this guy is 0 for 8 at Gulfstream Park. He's 1 for 2 at the distance. I wanted to figure out a way to use this proven loser, but use him underneath in a way that I could, you know, make a little bit of extra money. Now, when I see the odd board go off and this horse goes off at 2 to 1, now I'm even happier. Now I got to find this other horse. That led me to Warp Speed Baby, Tyler Gaff, Ralph Nix, another one that had a bunch of starts, you know, kind of at this level. But this is somewhere where I think just becoming better at reading the form, and it's not that it's difficult, but listen, this guy was also 0 for 8. He was 0 for 4 at the distance. Those are scary numbers to look at. But out of the last four starts, when two are 70s and two are 60s, and the two that are 70s are on these turf routes, I feel like this one just fits in so well. And you look at the favorites, you know, A Good Soldier with Jennifer Young. First off, the claim, 6%. I don't want that when I'm taking low-priced horses. Same thing with the number 10, Stormy Victory. First of all, outside, yes, gets Irad, so now we're going to get taxed for the Irad ride. But this one's also not the best first off the claim. Did have a win at Gulfstream Park. I just thought that this horse made so much sense with those back two turf numbers. And then you look at the prices of everyone else in this race, and this guy's 8 to 1. Sign me up for some Warp Speed Baby in this race.
Yeah, I mean, he made a lot of sense. I used him in my early pick five. I didn't have him on top, but yeah, he made a lot of sense for everything you mentioned. You got the two, we'll call them big figures, staring at you. You know, clearly he hasn't run as well, or at least not as fast onto PETA. You know, I'm kind of a line in the sand guy, and at 1 for 13, he's not quite there yet, but with five underneath finishes, he's starting to get there. Same with Sir Samuel. I could never use a Sir Samuel, you know, on top at least, but he's a, you know, 1 for 19 with six thirds. That kind of says it all. I went to the outside two runners. I had a good note on Trupia, and I knew he would be a big price, so I gave him a shot in here, because I did think that turf race back in his form a little bit made him a player against this group. And I thought he was actually really good last time, because he was ranked with a little bit of trouble around the turn in the backstretch, and he was a month the best. And then certainly, you know, Stormy Victory was a major player, but he's away from Rohan Crichton, and he's going to be an underlay price. So I didn't want to tie too tightly with him, but you know, I had it 11, 10, 7, 4, and those were the ones I used in my early pick five as well. And this is one of those races, too, where back to your point with Warp Speed Baby, if you're strictly betting to win in spots like this, and everybody kind of looks the same on paper, I mean, how are you going to take Sir Samuel? It's 2 to 1, which is, you know, absurd. At least Stormy Victory's got the big figures and has Irad. Sir Samuel's got nothing of the sort and is 1 for 19. So, you know, it goes back to the risk-reward angle of things.
Trupia for Brian. For me, I'm going with a little Warp Speed Baby. Let's see who gets it done in the N2L right now.
Racing at Gulfstream. From between horses, it's Super Royal Moon who gets the first call. More than I can handle. Moving to challenge, Tappet Brio has position toward the rail. Up in the center goes Stormy Victory, the first race favorite, is well situated. He's only 3 lengths behind. Trupia is next, followed out deep on the course by Chef Mentar. Racing between horses and Sir Samuel down at the rail, Hollywood Hellraiser. Angled at the back is Good Soldier as they chase the speed of More Than I Can Handle. More Than I Can Handle and jockey Angel Morales off the lead by 2.5. Super Royal Moon is second. The race favorite Stormy Victory now third. Tugging on the outside is Trupia, racing ahead of Warp Speed Baby. Two in front of the gray Tappet Brio. Beachmont Charlie's in the two-path. He's about seven lengths behind. Chef Mentor's in the blue behind him. The gray is Hollywood Hellraiser with From Between Sir Samuel and out the back Good Soldier. 48 seconds for the opening half mile as they race to the half-mile point. The leader, More Than I Can Handle, off the lead by four. Stormy Victory is second toward the outside Troopia, toward the rail Super Royal Moon. Warp Speed Baby is next. From out of the crowd, it's Sir Samuel who begins to make some ground. He's angled to the clear by Jose Ortiz. Hollywood Hellraiser's on his back, then Good Soldier, dropping back Beachmont Charlie and Chef Mentor as they try to reach More Than I Can Handle. They run to the top of the stretch with More Than I Can Handle the target. There's a wall of pursuers. On the far outside, Sir Samuel, Good Soldier, wheels widest of all. Hollywood Hellraiser stuck in traffic. The favorite Stormy Victory needs to do better than that. There's an eighth of a mile to go. Here comes Warp Speed Baby, surging forward to take over the lead. From the outside, Sir Samuel, From Between Horses, Tap It Brio, Warp Speed Baby's an 8-1 winner of race number one.
And Warp Speed Baby does get the job done. 76, the winning buyer, $18 winning mutual. And something that you brought up that's so important, you say a horse is 1 for 19, and you know, you're looking at that lifetime box, and I feel like a lot of people, they just look at buyer speed figures, and they don't try to put the entire career into a perspective. And I feel like at these lower levels, when these are non-two winners of life, you have to look, A, when do they break their maiden? If you can't find their maiden breaker on the page, they've been in this type of levels for a long time. Now, if they're running an open level claimers, now they're finally dropping to, you know, conditioned claimers. That's different. But a lot of these horses in these type of levels, you know, you have to find the horse that, A, had a decent time, decent start last time out. Now, listen, 5x3 last time, but that was synthetic. But, you know, missed it in the last two turf races for Warp Speed Baby by less than two lengths. That's fine. I think for me with Stormy Victory, you know, had the bigger figures, had the two bigger figures, and was getting irate. I thought the outside post was a little bit scary for me as well. And listen, Sir Samuel does what Sir Samuel does. Underlaid price, but hits the board. And everyone now will come back next time out and be like, man, this horse ran to one other good horse. You know, he's due finally, and he's going to run second again. And these are the type of horses that we always, for exactness, want to find, you know, oh, who do we put on top, and what six horses do we put underneath? Sometimes you have to invert that. What do I think will run second, and who can I put on top that can make that even juicier?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I mentioned it earlier, but my line in the sand is 1 for 15, and I don't care if you've run in the grade one, whatever, 15 times in a row. If you're 1 for 15, I'm just not using you, because sometimes, especially on the class choppers, you know, they get hit with a shovel 15 times in a row. It doesn't mean you're going to run just because you're dropping in class. And I, you know, people, especially new to the game, you know, these are pack and herd animals, and some of them just don't want to pass anybody. Now, Sir Samuel ran very well, you know, on Saturday. He was, what was he, you know, wide and things like that. But you're right, they're going to come back to him again. And it's just not there in the cards. I don't understand why in the world he was 2-1 in this spot. You want to tell me he was 5-1? That's sure. But, well, that was crazy. And that's, again, you go broke betting horses like Sir Samuel at this game, and you'll figure it out pretty soon. So, you know, those are the types that we should be lining up to play against.
And this is something, and just, you know, to bring it up, buyer par on the page is 75. This horse has now run 74, 72, 73, 71. So he's right there around that buyer par winner.
Yeah.
It's just, he's always going to find that one horse that's going to beat him. And just something else, you know, you bring up with the class droppers. And I think Pletcher had one like this last year at Saratoga, like opening day. I call it throwing the kitchen sink. The horse was adding blinkers, Lasix. I think they gelded him too. And it's like, at some point you have to be like, this guy is just throwing mud at the wall, hoping it's going to stick, and that the horse will now improve, or at least improve enough to now where he can finally find a better spot for the horse. A lot of times with class droppers, and this is why you have to get so good at that specific level of the claiming game, is find the guys who can win with class droppers that you can finally trust, and then find their pattern. Once you find that, you can start, you know, not eliminating the $3 horses, but maybe passing those sequences, or just being able to single them and move on, although that's kind of difficult when everyone else will take them, even though you've done the extra work. That's what's important in the claiming game.
Yeah, we see it a lot down here too, especially. You'll see a horse that's run like 9 times on Tapita and then tries dirt for the first time. And you just have to remember, you know, these are trainers that are with these horses every day, and a lot of them probably trained on dirt too. And if they've never raced on it, why, you know, they're just throwing, like you said, something at the wall, just hoping it sticks, because if if a horse has made X number of starts on one surface and it hasn't worked, and for the first time after, let's say, 11 starts, he's going to try a different surface. Wow, that's just kind of hoping to me. And, you know, if I trust a trainer, I have respect for a trainer. I don't necessarily mind like an equipment change or even, like you said, the kitchen sink. But if you're run of the mill trainer that is doing that, I tend to think that's another throwing it at the wall kind of thing.
I'll just add another one real quick for people who maybe play West Coast racing is Baffert. When he puts a horse in the turf, the horse doesn't run well, and then he automatically switches to the dirt.
Yeah.
Bob Baffert, he's a dirt trainer. If he doesn't put the horse on dirt the first time out, something is obviously just something that will be different about that horse. But let's move on to the next race. Race number 7 from Gulfstream Park. We're going 5 furlongs on the turf. It's an optional N1X 20,000 claimers for the state breds. Listen, another fun race. I circled about what I felt like was 6 in this race, including some the favorite, Java Buzz. But after a certain time, you have to just realize, if I have 5 circled, I probably shouldn't be playing the favorite, at least in multis. But at least know that, A, this horse is a contender. So if I like 5, I kind of have to make sure that when I'm looking at my other contenders, I need to play a little bit higher on the odds board. I ended up with Richie, the number 2 off the layoff for James Gullick. I just saw these 2 5 furlong races farther down the page. One was at this level, which wasn't that good, but this horse ran in a grade 3 and ran quite well. Now, obviously, this is the beginning of last year, and now we're coming off a very long layoff. But I just wondered if maybe this horse just needed some freshening, and now was finally getting back to the turf after all these Tapita tries. I just thought this one was a little bit interesting and going to be an excellent price. The other one I ended up using was Discreet Tune, Carlos David, Jaramillo. I'm a Carlos David guy through and through. This guy's numbers are absolutely insane with some of the stuff that he does. This one was the favorite last time out, beaten for 35 off of a slow-paced race. But I just wondered if with, you know, going away from Saez, maybe people would, you know, discredit. Now we go to Jaramillo, who is just as good on these type of speed types. So I went with Discreet Time or Discreet Tune and a little bit of Richie on the inside.
Yeah, I was, you know, as we talked about this race on TV, for I think it was Ron and I, or maybe it was Samantha, whatever, I kind of turned myself on to Discreet Tune more and more. I said, you know, this horse might be loose. We got a gate jockey in Jaramillo. But I was with Nick's bro. I thought he ran very well getting to the turf last time. And to me, it was by far his best race. The rail wasn't ideal, but I thought he'd be square enough a price. It's certainly a spread race. I mean, I mapped out a rainbow where I actually bought this race where, because, well, with the exception, I think, of the 81-1, where I couldn't pull the trigger, but I said to myself, this might blow this thing up a little bit. And, you know, my horse is down inside, so there's no guarantees there either. But I was against, you mentioned Java Buzz, and I know he sprinted well in the past, but if you watch his 2 races here earlier in the meet, routing, boy, he kind of sort of had to win, and he did, and he ran okay, don't get me wrong. But when you sprint, when you route to sprint on the turf at Gulfstream Park, I mean, I can't make up a different set of circumstances, because these races are so fast, and what happens is you blink and you're just run off your feet, and you get thrown with a whole different set of circumstances. So I was kind of willing to fade him a little bit. Another one of the reasons why I landed on Nick's Go. Feel the Beat was the other one that I had in the mix, but you don't want to close from the back on this turf course. It's just not going to work. And it's another reason why you look at Nick's Go chasing 44-1 last time. I said, this is the type of horse I want. And he's going to be, this is another angle just for, you know, kind of future reference. Sometimes, now Java Buzz, it might help Java Buzz too. Sometimes it takes a start for these horses to get acclimated when they cut back, the Woodbine horses especially. It's just too sharp for them. So you get them the next time, once they're a little more acclimated, because like you're going to see in this race, boy, they couldn't run any faster early on.
We're going to go with Richie and Discreet Tune for myself. Nick's bro for my man, Brian. Let's see who gets done this N1X right now.
And they're off. Level beginning. Soon after the start, it was Richie who heads off for the early lead. Java Buzz hustles forward to challenge. Away into the top flight, that's Discreet Tune. He's now up to third. Regimental Command is on the far outside, and Nick's Bros hunting some forward position toward the rail. Adios Gary into the top flight, then back to Loyal Louie ahead of Exchange Day and Big Daddy Dave. The trailer is Feel the Beat. Into the forward turn they go. Richie at 9-1 has rail position and the lead. Java Buzz is their second. Three wide. Discreet Tune is now third. Two back to Adios. Gary, Nick's bro, red color starting to warm to the task. He's 4.5 lengths off the speed of Richie. Off the turn and the stretch drive. It's Richie. He has the lead and he tries to get away. Java Buzz is back to third. Up to the outside. Adios Gary from between horses. Discreet Tune. Final eighth of a mile. It's Richie. And the colors of Crownsway Racing. 2.5 in front. Nixbro can't get him. Richie wins. Second was Nixbro. Got close after that. The photos for third between Adios Gary and Loyal Louie.
And Richie gets the job done. 81, the winning buyer. 2040, the winning mutual. This is a race that when I was just going through the race that we should talk about, not that I felt good or bad, I did like for having the winner, but this is just one where I don't know if I just got lucky or what say it, because when you look overall, you know, James Gullick is just 0-for-1 off these long layoffs, but he's so good at turf sprints, 25% with limited starters. And I think when it comes down to just, not just the turf in general, but turf sprints, I want trainers who show a good winning attitude towards it, because there's so many other trainers where you see they can't win on either side of it, long or short. So when I see these guys who have good turf sprint numbers as well, I mean, you look at the rest of the race, you know, we have Nick's bro run second, which, you know, second time on the turf kind of runs the same type of number, which usually you expect to see a little bit of improvement, and improvement would have gotten the job done here, which is kind of disgusting at 7-2. And then you have, you know, Loyal Louie and Adios Gary, horses that, you know, are coming, you know, from double digit prices. And the only two horses that really ran this race was Richie and Nick's bro. Everyone else is kind of backed up.
Yeah, that's the frustrating part about it. And many of them regressed for no real reason. Jimmy's such a good, sharp guy that, you know, it's kudos to him for getting Richie, who's a classy, cool old dude, to fire off a layoff, a pretty long layoff, into essentially almost run as good as he ever run.
Yeah.
You know, for sure. Nick's bro ran his race. He just ran into one better on the day. But, you know, Richie did it the hard way, too. He absolutely bottomed out Java Buzz, and he bottomed out Discreet Tune, too. And he just kept on going. And, you know, you see that a lot in these turf races. But he did it the hard way, 43-1. So it was just, you really can't take anything away from him. And, you know, Nick's bro, a little too far back early on, but he ran his race and he just ran into one better. It happens.
I have a feeling with Richie that we're not going to want this one next time out. I know that the bounce idea is more for dirt than for turf, but to come off such a long layoff, run so well into such fast fractions, I'm curious to see where this one ends up. Now, obviously, I guess N2X is the next eligible idea. You know, I don't think this one's going to a stake race with an 81, but Richie, for me, next time out might be a bit of a pass. Whereas Nick's bro, you know, running his race, there's only so many of these types of horses that you can run into at this N1X level, that this one might be the same exact type of price next time out, and this one where you can get the job done.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's so tricky, because you think, okay, Richie's going to bounce and he's going to regress, but then you think, well, wait, Richie hadn't run since August.
That's fair.
Maybe he moves forward, you know? Yeah. So it's all in the eye of the beholder. When you have speed on this turf course, it's going to play, and maybe it, you know, catches up to him in deep stretch because he ran so big in this race, what have you. But when you have speed on this turf course, especially when it's firm, it's going to play. So, I would definitely be very I'll know Richie's in there next time he runs, that's for sure.
What's one of the last race, the finale on this Saturday card at Gulfstream Park, maiden 12-5, 5.5 on the synth. One of these races that I always try to get to when I'm talking with you. In this race, you know, you see some class drop, you see some horses that have, you know, ran at this level before. I kind of just circled three, and they were the 3, 4, and 5. We'll talk about Sponger real quick. 16-1 last time out, ran a 44 for Joseph Orsino. Joe's got okay numbers on the synth, 13%, not the best ROI. But this is just one that, you know, kind of ran the best first time over the surface. This, you know, Joe's 4% for the meet. I'm looking for a little bit of value here with Sponger. Sure. One that I definitely wanted to add off that 16-1 price last time out. Out for a run, Christopher Davis, 64, 3 back on the synth for this Irad Ortiz runner. Now gets Irad in the saddle for the first time. This one that I thought might be a little bit interesting. And heading west, Julian Leperoux, Brian Lynch. If you look back, he's been on the turf twice now. His best race at a long price against better in the maiden special weight with that 52 buyer. I kind of decided to just knock out for a run out. I thought Sponger and heading west could get me the job done here.
Yeah, I had zero opinion, and they were all you know, relatively slow. I took just a total stab on a race where I was spreading. I went with the 7 Heart of the Beast, Kathleen O'Connell first. Her, she's solid 16%. You got a slew of works there. You know, her, she rides Edgar Perez a lot. I had zero opinion in the race. I said, you know what, a first time starter, if you can run a 50 by her, you're a player in this kind of spot. You know, clearly Out for a Run was, you know, a month the horse to beat. As you said, you look at the Tapita race, 3 back, and it's just so much better than anything the horse had ever done. You get the IRAD, as you, I like what you said, they're the tax on IRAD, but you know, that race is just way, way better than anything in here. So I was kind of like, you know what, I'll take a price and I'll use the favorite as well, and maybe I can get through with those two. But you know, you're, this is the type of race, you know, you're allowed, you said Sponger, you're allowed to, you know, we've mentioned throwing something at the wall. Boy, oh boy, this is the type of race you're allowed to do that, because there's nothing in here to fear, and you know you're going to get an underlaid price on who, on the horse to beat.
Definitely the reason why I picked this race. Kind of switch it up for one of our races that we talk about. For me, like I said, it's Sponger and Heading West. Heart of the Beast, first time starter for Brian. Let's see if one of those three can get it done.
Runners away. Outside, Omo 10 Girl gets the first call. Splitting Horses Sponger out for a run, looking for some place to race. She'll angle to the clear. At the rail, that's always connected. Out wide on the course, but moving up is Velocissima. Love Unlimited's not far away. The one way at the back is Heart of a Beast. They go to the half-mile point. Omo 10 Girl has the lead. Leads by a length. Clear racetrack for Out for a Run, who's now second. Toward the outside, Beer Valley is now third. Far outside, Stepstones is there fourth. Moving between, always connected. Down at the rail, that's Sponger, who drops back a length and a half better than Velocissima. Then Heading West and Love Unlimited. Still well back is Heart of the Beast. They run to the top of the stretch with Omo 10 Girl still the target. Up on the outside, Out for a Run with no excuse from there. Into the clear comes Always Connected. So the favorites are second and third behind Omo 10 Girl, who's still going. Eighth of a mile to go. Omo 10 Girl, she widens on him now. She leads 3.5. Out for a Run is dropping back toward the outside, Velocissima. But at 5-1, it's Omo 10 Girl in front. Omo 10.
And Omo 10 Girl gets it done with a 65 buyer. 1280, the winning mutual. And I mean, like you had said, throwing something at the wall when none of our horses really hit the top three. This is just a tough race, man. These 12-5 on the synth, you know, you hear a lot of people complain, you know, oh, the synthetic is so hard to handicap. Well, if you put as much time into that as you did, you know, everything else, you might actually figure out how to, you know, how to get it done there. And in this type of race, you know, Omo 10 Girl was the one to get it done. 1280 seems a little bit light for when you look overall at the whole race. Obviously, two of our three run, you know, in the bottom three. So Heart of the Beast maybe next time, not so much on the synthetic going forward.
Yeah, my race was done earlier than yours.
That's very fair.
My horse didn't break and hit the gate, and your horse had a world of trouble as well. You know, this is, boy, it's, you said 65
buyer. Yep.
Buyer.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a little unfathomable, or a lot unfathomable. And you said, I'm looking at the chart now, 5.4-1. That's almost like a they knew. I mean, how is this horse 5-1? How is this horse blazing? I didn't blaze on the lead, but how is this horse, you know, on the lead? It's just a little hard to figure. And it's funny, earlier in the card, I showed a stat for Carlos Perez and Herberto Figueroa, how they do so well together. They're not high percentage guys, and lo and behold, didn't work for me earlier, and here they pop in the finale. I mean, this horse is really good. You've got to just golf clap and say okay. Because you know, if you're going to tell me prior to this race someone's running a 65, I'm saying okay, Alpha Run's going to run a 65 and he's going to win at 7-5, and you know, well, that's you know, she is the best horse. I get it. Omo 10 Girl at 0-5 didn't really improve off the claim, had never run on Tapita. And I guess that December 18th drill, if you did your homework, was pretty sharp. But there's just not a lot here to go on. I guess if you're sitting up there at a minute to post and you looked at the board, Spence, and you said, who's sticking out here? And you say, oh my goodness, Omo 10 Girls 5-1. That's not right. Maybe that was your hint. Other than that, I got nothing for you in a spot like this.
I mean, listen, I'm not looking for, you know, a filly of Gervin to be winning synthetic races. Let's leave it at that. I think if I look real quick, The fact that Figueroa is only 5% and Carlos is, you know, 12 overall for the year, and the fact that they do hit it 26%, I guess, is a positive. He was on him last time, though, so it wasn't like there was a big jockey change. They just kept this one. They dropped him 50% down to 12.5. Like you said, you golf clap, you move on. This is the type of race where you have to try to, you know, find five or six and hope that the favorite's not the one to do it. Listen, out for a run. If you look at it, why was this horse not put on synthetic after that maiden claiming race? Obviously, there's not big 70,000 maiden special weights for the synthetics yet. But then they dropped this one back down to 20. Why couldn't this one run for some 40 type of race on the synthetic? Maybe it didn't fill, but I think overall, when you look at some of these horses, you know, for me, the fact that, you know, Sponger ran, so I'm happy I put Heading West in there. Obviously, just didn't run as well either, down to a 42. Listen, form matters. Just because I see a race four back that means anything. Listen, the way my life was 4 months ago compared to what it is now is completely different than it was 4 months ago, and that's the same thing for horses. And I think a lot of times, especially in this day and age, there's so much talk about pace, class, and speed figures. I think form a lot of times, like almost if the horse is running, you know, first, second, or third the last time out, people forget, you know, if they haven't hit the board in five tries, like they're something is obviously just either wrong with the horse or they're trying to find the right spot or something. So when they keep ending up at the same level, there's nowhere else the trainer can really put this horse.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And this really was a fresh new face kind of race. It was just a little, to me, a little unfathomable to come up with Omo 10 Girl. But, you know, it's almost not even the point of who won. The point is more, you know, looking for the right kind of things and doing the right kind of thing. You're either – this is a race where you're either singling out for a run or you're doing what you and I did and really try to get creative and throw something at the wall because – you know, you got to single out for a run or you got to go six or seven deep because it just doesn't make really sense otherwise. I couldn't come up with the winner, but these are the type of races. Don't forget, too, we're at the bottom here at 12.5.
Yes, we are.
And anything can happen. So, you know, it's just it's food for thought. If you can come up with anything, again, maybe it's a trainer jock. You do see that good Tapita work back in December. Those are a couple angles, and then you roll the dice. But yeah, this was a little bit of a tricky one for me to come up with.
Last thing I'll leave before we end the podcast, like you had said, the bottom is 12.5, and a quote I always like just try to adhere to is the bottom is the bottom. If you have horses that have never raced at the bottom level, then they are at least at some level they've been better than these guys who can't win at 12.5. So the fact that a class dropper also won this race, you know, I think when I look back at this race, you know, Omo 10 Girl maybe won't run a 65 next time out, but one that I think overall, this is a fresh face type of race, as you said, and I'm glad that we got to talk about this one. But that is all the time we have for today's podcast. I do want to thank my special guest, Brian Natto, for coming on. Brian, what do we got going on at Gulfstream Park, and where can people find you to talk some horse racing?
Yeah, man, it's all in front of us now. You know what? In less than 2 weeks, Saturday, April 1st, we've got the Curl in Florida Derby. I'm sure you saw it, and Forte was just beyond impressive. You know, if the Derby was run right now, Forte is probably 8-5 in a 20-horse field. Kentucky Derby, I'm talking about. So it'll be interesting to see him come back, and, you know, it's a true 9-furlong race. There's no short finish line, so we'll see how he does. And, of course, that's a centerpiece, 10 stakes on that day. And that's the closing weekend of the championship meet. We'll wrap it all up Sunday. Then we go back to 4 days. But, yeah, we're all just kind of counting down the days and eagerly looking forward to that Florida Derby. And, you know, Todd Pletcher's got another chance to win not only another Florida Derby but another Kentucky Derby. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of races to be run, and there's a lot of days between now and the Kentucky Derby, a lot more than what the calendar tells you in terms of horses. But, boy, I'll be honest with you, I've never been a fan of Forte, but after I wouldn't want to trade him for anybody because his comeback was just devastating in about third gear too. So, you know, we're excited about that. Spence, as you know, when you have a 1-5 in a race, you know, you're not going to get a bunch of tigers, and he's probably going to scare off some of the competition. But that doesn't mean it's not a great spectacle to see him. And the rest of the undercard will be phenomenal with all the graded stakes and huge pools. And the Rainbow's back up to, 600,000, and that's growing day by day. So, yeah, get involved in turf racing and all that. So lots to look forward to.
Looking forward to it just as much, if not more, than you are. Thank you so much for coming on, Brian. Appreciate it.
Anytime, buddy. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Podcast on the Money Media Network. Also want to thank my special guest, Brian Natto, for coming along and talking all things Gulfstream Park with myself. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's president is Peter Thomas Florentel. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. And our In the Money Media business manager is Drew Coatney. I'm Spencer Lugenbuehl. We will see you next time.